Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Pamela Brewer welcoming you to this edition of Men's Monday. Every Monday, you and I have the opportunity to meet a man and to learn about his path in his life. Today is no different. I am very pleased to introduce to you T.M. Marshall, who is the author of Joyful Now, Heal Yourself, Heal the World. Tim is described as a healer, a teacher, and a spiritual counselor. Tim, welcome to Mind Talk.
Hi, Pamela. Thanks for having me.
Tim, I'd like to start with asking you about you and your life, where you grew up. So let's kind of start with little Tim. Where were you born and what were your early remembrances?
I'm actually from Baltimore, Maryland, and I was actually raised Catholic, so we went to a Catholic church. And when growing up, I actually started seeing energy when I was in the Catholic Church, which actually turned my life around to lead me to where I'm at today.
Now, when you say seeing energy, what do you mean?
A story goes with this. I was sitting in a church. I was 8 years old. My brother and a friend of his were sitting next to me. And when the priest walked in, he was glowing in my eyes. I saw a literal glow around him. And as I concentrated on it, I actually started seeing it on everybody. And I saw it on my own hands. It was my brother's laughter because I was looking at my hand that took me out of it. But it was just the first occasion. I had many since then, and I see it regularly now.
That's interesting. Did you share that experience with your brother, with your parents, with friends? Did you tell them what you had seen?
I had tried to on more than one occasion, but it was not taken seriously. Until I became an adult, people really didn't understand what I was experiencing, and it actually made me sad for them because it's enriched my life in ways that I really cannot describe.
Tell us more about, I'm going to go back to Tim, after you had this experience really as a young child, how did that, if it did, change your life as a youngster or impact your life, perhaps, as a youngster?
I had relations more with adults than I did with children my age. I would talk theology and occult things with several friends that lived on my block. And it just seemed that I related very easily with adults at that point.
What was the reaction of your parents to that?
There was a turbulent time going on in the household, and I was pretty much my own entity. So actually, they were not really giving it much thought at all because they had their own issues to deal with. So, I kind of stood alone in that.
So it sounds like this was almost a respite for you. This ability that you experienced was a way for you perhaps to take yourself out of the chaos in the household?
Perhaps. I never considered it as such. I really had loving parents, but my mother was putting herself through college and trying to become, making a living, a little bit better living. And my mother and father actually separated when I was about 9 years old. So it was a year before all the big turbulence actually happened that this actually started occurring.
Take us through junior high and high school with the experiences you were having as you tried to share them with friends. I would think you would have gotten mixed emotions.
Actually, I didn't share it that much at that point. I excelled in school. I found it extremely easy. And until certain events happened in my life, I really didn't share it that much because I developed it and I was learning it myself through reading and through actually going to different churches and trying to figure things out.
All right. Talk about the different churches that you went to. Did you find that there were similarities, that there was acceptance? What was that experience like for you?
I went from Catholic. I saw a man who was excommunicated, which broke my heart because I started understanding things a little bit deeper. I then went to a Baptist church, and certain events happened that made me extremely disheartened in it. I went to a Presbyterian church and was startled. But the thing is that there is no wrong religion, there is no wrong church. When I went into the military, I actually went as an atheist because I could not find a faith that resonated with my heart.
You went as an atheist, and did that impact at all how people were responding to you?
Actually, it was through that I started opening up and sharing my experiences with folks.
The being in the military, what were those experiences like?
It was an education. It was something that actually made me grow up even more so. I really stood my ground very, very well most of my life because of it. But I had a dear friend who was in trouble, and through helping her, she actually gave me a Bible and said, "Tim, God's got something special for you to do. I want you to read this." And I still have that Bible.
Interesting. When you came out of the military, were you clear about what path you wanted to walk on professionally?
Not really. I was engaged to be married and trying to build a life around that and working whatever I could work. I was writing a lot at that time too, trying to put all this down on paper.
And did you ultimately get married?
No, actually, my fiance passed away.
Oh no. I would imagine that would have had a profound impact on you.
That catapulted me into the world that I live in now.
Well, that would be clearly a hugely upsetting, I don't even know the word to describe the loss of a fiance, someone with whom you had planned to live your life. And yet today, as you and I speak, we're going to be talking about a book you've written entitled Joyful Now. So how did you move from the devastation of that loss to being able to create a document entitled Joyful?
Okay. What happened was when I returned to Florida after the event occurred, I lived in isolation. I actually stayed separated from my family. I had closed out all accounts and all affairs where I had been living. And I went for about a year without really communicating. At the end of that, I started getting into self-help books and started going to events. And I started becoming a speaker at these events, which grew into something of my lifestyle today because people wanted me to coach them. So I started coaching folks and started making my living at that. And it fulfilled me in ways that I thrive on. I love to help people get to the next step. I love helping people reach new dimensions in their life. In doing that, I actually found my own joy.
When you closed out your affairs and spent a year essentially in isolation, was that your intention or did that seem to just happen?
With the colors and the lights that I see came a voice. And this voice generally kept me safe. Whenever anything was going, I can't call on the voice, it just comes. But when I returned after my fiance passed away, a voice told me, "Go no further when I reach my destination." I was still 3 hours from my home. So I parked there, got a hotel, found some work, and lived there for a while. I made some phone calls and made sure that all my affairs were settled. And I spent a year there.
That's interesting. Would you describe that voice as the equivalent of one's intuition, or would you say that it was something different?
I think intuition works good, but it was actually a literal voice that would come. And its accuracy on worldly events, they were stunning. They were just stunning.
Would the voice frighten you, or did it feel comfortable, comforting?
I was 8 years old when it first came. It was 2 weeks after I first started seeing the auras, and it felt totally normal. It felt totally natural to me.
As you paid attention, landed where you landed, stayed where you stayed, and ultimately began speaking, what kinds of things would you talk about?
Actually, I had a think tank, and we developed curriculums. I would talk about how to get into silent states within, how to open yourself up to your own intuition, how to actually fix things, not by avoiding them, but by approaching them and welcoming them in.
It's interesting because at the very beginning of your book, you make the statement that humanity as a whole is a contradiction.
Mm-hmm.
Say something about that concept. Say a little more about that concept.
Every one of us has a unique perspective, okay? We see this world in a way that we have developed our entire lifetime. People think that what they're experiencing is separate from everybody else. The truth is that everything in our lives, we actually create ourselves. By putting your mind on something, you draw it into your life. And yet, we want to get all these external things to prove our validity. So there's a dichotomy there. We have all that we need within us, and everything that we desire, all we have to do is focus upon it. If we focus upon it, actually live it as if it's really right here and now, emotionally, but within your own mind's eye, you can actually open the doors to that reality. But people think that by hurting one another, by stealing from one another, that's how they're going to make it, and that's how they're going to obtain what they need in life. That's the dichotomy I'm talking about. There's so much violence in this world, when the truth is, everything you ever needed is within you. It's just the way it is.
You know, I hear the passion in your voice as you talk about this. It really seems like you have, with your whole self, embraced the work that you do.
Oh, absolutely. I couldn't have written Joyful Now without being in that state myself.
Later on in your book, you make the comment that we fear death, we want to live forever, and yet we'll do self-harming things like smoking and things of that nature. So clearly humanity, we have mixed ways of experiencing ourselves in our world. What do you say about that?
Everybody's reaching for answers. They do it in their own way. Some people think that by harming their bodies, they are satisfying an urge within them. And there's no wrong, okay? Understand that first, is no matter how you live life, it's your life. Live it fully. But we tend to do things that are against our better well-being in order to satisfy something that we believe is missing in our life. And the truth is if you embrace your life and you truly respect who you are and what you are, perhaps you would give these things up.
So you and I both know that there are some folks listening who are saying, well, that sounds like magical mystery stuff and that it has no bearing on my life. This has no relevance to me and the way I walk in the world. So what do you say to the skeptics?
I say, take a look at your life and see how you've brought things into your life. If you own a car, think about how that began. Did you first see that car? Did you see it on an ad? What did you feel about that car before you bought it? Because I tell you, you manifested it in your mind first. The same goes for your house. The same goes for your relationships. The same goes for everything you draw into life. The first place it starts is in your mind. Whether or not you believe it or not, if you look at your own life, you'll see it's true.
So for someone who perhaps imagines themselves with a Ferrari, or a Rolls or a Bentley, but mm-hmm. they find themselves buying something significantly less costly and less what's the word? Less luxurious.
Okay, if you want that Ferrari or the Bentley, why didn't you schedule a test drive with it, get a picture of yourself either in the car or near the car, and then place it on a vision board so that you can see it every day? If you don't have what you want, there's no reason why you can't obtain it. What you've got to do is put it into your conscious thought first. You see, if you are saying that I want something from a place of lack, the universe answer is giving you more of that lack. It's all an emotional-based thing.
So for the person who is saying, you know, I was born with $0 in my pocket to a family that has very little by way of finances, for example, to offer me, how does that person then think about putting an extravagant anything on their vision board? And in a minute, I'm going to ask you to tell us more about vision boards, but how does that person think about that? It just doesn't seem like there's a connection. It doesn't seem like there would be a way for them to bring into their lives, for example, that extravagant car.
All right. Well, the truth is that if they were seeing that extravagant car and they truly desired it, they would have drawn that car into their lives. Of that, I'm quite certain. But if you go back in the history books and you look at some of the people who have gone from even less than what they want, look at somebody like Booker T. Washington, who started out as a slave. Yet everybody knows that name because he had drive enough to know that he was better than what he was being told he was. And that's what it generally takes. If you came up, and by the way, my family was very poor, and yet here I am today. It does not matter where you come from. It matters where you are right now. If you believe that you're going to be down in that hole, you're going to be down in that hole. Simple as that. Mm-hmm. If you change your belief, you actually change your world.
So that sounds like a pretty powerful way of thinking about yourself. And for some folks, perhaps pretty scary.
Well, then you got to look at the fear. If you're scared of thinking this way, find out why. All the problems that we suffer are internal problems. They're nothing more, nothing less. So if we look inside and we see something like fear of this type of thinking, approach it. And instead of trying to discard it, welcome it in and see what it is inside of you. See why you're fearing that. You see, the problem that I hear most often is that people tell you, well, we got to get rid of these thoughts. No, you don't have to get rid of these thoughts. You have to welcome them in, and then by welcoming them in, you'll take the energy out of your life. And then you can change your mind.
So it sounds like by welcoming them in, you're able to understand them and do something different with them.
Well, it goes even beyond that.
Okay.
Every thought we have growing up, it causes trauma in our lives because of the energy it leaves behind. Instead of approaching that trauma in a state that you want to get rid of that trauma or change that trauma, if you welcome it in, what you're doing is it's kind of depressurizing a tire. You're letting the energy out of it.
I see.
By paying attention to it.
Tim, we're going to take a break, but when we come back, I want to go back to vision board and have you explain to us what that is and how that works. Folks, this is Pamela Brewer. You're listening to Mind Talk. We'll be back. Tim, before I ask you to explain a vision board, I want to go back to something that you said earlier on. When you talked about your experience as a youngster, seeing auras around people and actually hearing voices, because you and I know that had you shared that with certain of the adults in your life, they would have said, hearing voices, seeing things, this is not good. We need to take him to a psychiatrist, a psychologist, somebody, because this is not good. Did that ever happen to you?
No, it has not. The first time I heard the voice was 2 weeks after I first started seeing an aura. I actually went to Catholic school, and I was in a math class, and the nun, she became radiantly beautiful in my eyes. I can't describe that better. It's just that her radiance was so incredible to look at that I kind of became mesmerized by it. And she actually took me to a little room where you usually get your butt spanked for acting up in class. And I explained to her what I saw, and I saw it happening again, and she actually started crying. And the voice told me that she was not going to be my teacher for much longer. So what I asked her is, why are you leaving us? And this started a whole new thing, because a week later she was gone. She actually quit the Catholic school and she went to do other things in her life.
Interesting.
So the thing is that's what I say about accuracy. The accuracy of it was quite incredible. I did not share this with others. I didn't, because I didn't understand it. And at the same time, it seemed to be my own personal thing. And I kind of intuitively understood that this was not something that I could share easily.
And it also sounds like when you did share, you received such affirmation in the sharing that would have, I would suspect, have allowed it to settle inside of you with more comfort.
Absolutely, absolutely. The friends who gave me the Bible, we were actually in a guard stand. I was in Germany, and she really had some serious issues, and it was the voice that was answering her, not me. There was something going on inside of me that I really didn't have full conscious control over.
Interesting.
But the thing is, it was exactly what she needed to hear. It was exactly what she needed to progress. So this has happened regularly. My minister today has actually seen my face change when she comes, and it is a feminine voice that comes through. And it's a lot of times it takes me away from myself when it does come.
It sounds though like it is something with which you have become quite comfortable and certainly willing to share with others. Let's talk about a vision board. We've been hearing about that for years, but I'm not sure that folks really know what it is and what the purpose is. So walk us through that.
I have a different way from other people of making a vision board, but a vision board basically amounts to your dreams. So the first thing I would say is dream big. Go way beyond your comfort level when you make one. When you figure out what your dream house looks like, go on the real estate pages and try to find that dream house. And then schedule a walkthrough. Actually go into the house, get a picture of yourself on the front doorstep of that house. This will help you to have an experience that you can remember through the picture. Then place that on a poster board. Your dream car, again, dream big. What is the ultimate car? Not just the one that you want next, but the ultimate car you could have in your life. Schedule a test drive. Go out there, test drive that car. You don't have to commit to anything, but get a picture of you either in the car or by the car. Put it on the poster board. Your furnishings. What kind of furnishings would be in your house if your life was exactly the way that you wanted it to be? Go out there and look at that furniture. Go out there, get a picture, sitting on that couch, whatever it takes, put it on your poster board. And then, if you have destinations that you've never been to before, take New Zealand, that's on my vision board. Find a provocative picture online, post it on your vision board. And then what I did with mine is I put it in an inexpensive poster frame, and I hung it on my wall where I'll see it every single day. By seeing this every day, I'm reminded of what my dreams are. And one word of advice is that when you achieve what's on your vision board, make a new one. Never stop dreaming. Never stop reaching for the next level.
There are so many people, and I would suggest, certainly throughout history, but truly today, there are so many people who have the sense that they've lost their dreams, that their dreams are not within sight or vision. What do you say to those folks?
That is living in lack. We live in an abundant universe. That is a matter of an internal switch that you need to turn off. If you think that there's lack in the world, you're going to draw lack. The universe is going to prove that there's lack in this world. If you think anything, as long as you keep it in the forefront of your thoughts, that is what you draw in this world. So think better thoughts. If you're really, really down low, just try to reach for that next level up. I mean, just take a little bit of step up. Try to get beyond that lowness. The world is exactly as you see it, and you will draw into your world exactly what you're holding to be true in the world.
You talk about perception filters in Joyful Now. I think that's what you're talking about now. Is that correct?
Yes and no.
Okay.
A lot of the things that we experience in life is our holdbacks from what we've experienced in the past. We are constantly comparing the moment with what something happened in the past. You're not living in the moment. Now, a lot of people talk about living in the moment. And what that is letting go of what you believe it is related to the past. So when I talk about filters, what I'm talking about is serious issues. If you've got something that is so traumatic that you can't let it go, you have to actually either seek help so that you can do this very gently or learn how to welcome it yourself. Have you ever heard of somatic healing?
Yes, but just explain that to the audience. I have.
Well, with somatic healing, what you're doing is you're led into the event that is the root cause of the trauma that you're living in. And you feel it in your body somewhere. It'll express itself as maybe a little tug, maybe a little pulse, whatever it is. It'll be different for everybody, everywhere. But once you find this feeling in your body, be with it. Welcome it. Let it be what it is. And by the way, this is a great way to get rid of pain as well. If you've got pain, instead of seeking that medication, try describing what the pain truly is inside of you. It works for almost any type of pain. If you go into it really deeply, you'll realize the energy is being leached out of it and the pain will fade away.
So again, what we go back to is what you have continually said, which is that it is truly all within ourselves.
Yes, it is. It is truly all within ourselves. Your world is exactly what you make it. And as long as you keep your thoughts on a higher level, you'll keep on going for higher things.
The idea that you articulate in your book, when you talk about folks who perhaps are riddled with anxiety, and from the moment they wake up, their mind is overwhelmed with what comes next. There are lots of people like that in the world. There are people who are in jobs that demand that of them, or in lives that seem to require that of them. Would you ask them to take a step back, or how would you counsel that individual?
I would say maybe even set your alarm clock for 15 or 20 minutes early in the morning and meditate before you go in. Go in and see how you're feeling, how your pulse is, how all the stuff going on inside of you is. If you can center yourself that way before you go in, you're going to find that it's much more peaceful than you imagined it would be.
And I would guess much more productive.
In a sense, absolutely, because if you're more at peace with yourself, you're actually happier with what you're doing. So absolutely.
You also let folks know that if you begin your day, and I think we kind of know this, but perhaps not enough, if you start off your day with negative emotions, you're likely going to have a bad day.
Well, it's the law of attraction. whatever you hold in mind is what you draw into you. So, of course, if you're going to be negative in the morning, you're going to have people come at you with this negative energy all day long, and it's going to make it a miserable day. If you go in centered and you're at peace with yourself, you'd be amazed how people seem to change around you. It's not them changing. It's what you're drawing to you.
So for someone who is grieving, whatever it might be, and it wakes up truly in a sad place, not necessarily a negative, having bad feelings, bad thoughts place, but just a profoundly sad place. Is that person theoretically able to turn that profound sadness into joy and to face the day differently?
Actually, that's a little bit longer term. When you're grieving, you've got to go through the grief. You've got to go through the process, not avoid the process. So what you do is, again, meditation is a great tool for all of this. See what it truly means inside of you to grieve. See what it truly is and explore it. The more you explore it, the faster you relieve the energy of it. Now, this could take anywhere. Somebody could do it in a day or two if they're really practiced at this. But as I told you, mine took a whole year. It wasn't that I was running away from life. It was that I was internalizing and figuring out what it really meant for my life.
For so many people, I would suggest the world in which we live today does not encourage, I mean, to some extent it does, but in several ways it does not encourage self-reflection. It does not encourage sitting still. It's kind of a topsy-turvy world, because on the one hand, everybody's talking about mindfulness and living in the moment, but on the other hand, there's a lot of discouragement to being mindful and living in the moment and focusing within. I could say, how did we get there? But we don't have 24 hours to talk about it. So my question is, what do we do now that we're here? How do you guide folks forward?
First thing is look inside of yourself and see what it truly means to you. See what that feeling is. See where it's at in your body. And actually make peace with what it is and accept it as part of your life. Just welcome it. If you can do this, it doesn't matter what it is, grief, anxiety, any of it. If you actually explore it, don't avoid it, explore it. The problem people have is that they try to avoid it. They try to push it away from themselves. Well, if you ever notice, when you try to push something away from yourself, what hits you in the face is that same thing over and over again. So if you just welcome it in your life, sit quietly and just explore it. If you don't have the ability to do that, get a mentor, get somebody who does this already,
okay,
and work with them.
So the folks who are allowing their fears to get in the way of even their ability to sit still and look within, what you're saying is perhaps look at the fear rather than move away from the fear and then move away from yourself. Try to take a look at the fear, what it means, where it comes from, what you believe about it. Am I understanding
exactly
you? Okay.
That's exactly right. The thing is, I'm a trained hypnotherapist, and the only way to alleviate fear is by understanding what that fear truly is. If you go about fearing it without knowing that, there's no way to get rid of it. It's really crazy the way it works, but it really does work. Once you understand what the problem is, you actually start taking the energy out of it. So first thing is try to be totally in touch with it. Try to totally be aware of it in such a way that you're welcoming it rather than pushing it away.
One of the things that I often say to folks is asking them whether or not the thing that they fear has a basis in their lives, or is this a fear that was taught to them?
Actually, it doesn't really matter.
Okay.
What you need to do is you need to find out where it's at inside of you and what it means to you. The past is the past, and it's totally illusion. So anything you carry is of the moment. It is not of the past. It's what you might be drawing it from the past, absolutely. but what is it right here and now for you? You need to deal with what is, not what was.
Staying right here, centered in the moment, in your body, in your current reality.
Yes.
Okay. As I was going through Joyful Now, Heal Yourself, Heal the World, I noticed that every now and then you would make recommendations for people's, for the reader's physical well-being. I noticed that you, for example, seemed quite annoyed about the way in which we are consuming the resources, the natural resources that are around us. Are you annoyed about that? Are you worried about that?
No, not really. Tell you the truth, it's something I would love to change inside the book, okay? The thing is that I thought that myself when I reread it myself. My whole concern is that people are not self-aware. When you become self-aware, you become a steward of the world. And in becoming a steward of the world, you're going to naturally be inclined to do things that are healthy not only for you, but for the world in general.
I see.
Once you heal yourself, okay, you actually help other people heal.
So, in fact, a lot of people will say, well, I don't want to focus on myself because that's just selfish. And what you're saying is, as you focus on yourself, you're helping those around you. And that's a good thing for you and for them.
You've heard the saying, Doctor, heal thyself.
Indeed.
All right. Well, it's the same thing. To heal the world, you got to start from within. You can't change anything outside of you. You can only change the internal world. If you think you can control anything beyond your own life, well, you're reaching for something that doesn't exist. Your life is your life is your life. You've got to heal what's inside of you, and when you do, you will start healing everything around you. And by the way, I don't think that selfish is a bad word, because if you are not aware of yourself and if you're not helping yourself, how do you help anybody else?
Very true, I would suggest. Tim, we're going to go to a break, and when we come back, there are specific exercises, several exercises that you offer in your book, and I'd like to walk through just a couple of them. So, folks, this is Pamela Brewer. You are listening to Mind Talk. I am having a conversation with T.M. Marshall, who is the author of Joyful Now, Heal Yourself, Heal the World. And I think, I'm not sure that I mentioned, Tim, that you are an artist as well. And I believe this is your artwork on the cover.
It is indeed.
It's beautiful.
Thank you.
Folks, we'll be right back. Tim, you have several exercises. Let's talk about the hat list. What is that?
All right. The hat list is part of self-recognition. How do you describe yourself when you're being introduced to somebody? We tend to go into the past and draw things out, which I call the hats. See, when I say hat, I mean maybe you say you're a plumber. Maybe you say you're a father. Maybe you say you're a mother. Maybe you say that you're a healer. All these things, you can be all of these things, by the way, and these are the hats you wear. So in understanding where you're coming from, when you actually vocalize this to others, you start to gain an understanding to your own perspective, to your own considerations of who you are. And by doing this, you're actually becoming more self-aware.
So in other words, asking yourself, identifying for yourself the various roles that you perceive that you play in your life and in the lives of others?
Mm-hmm. Okay. It is. The okay. hat is the role.
Okay.
Absolutely. But and why I call it a hat is because you actually put it on and you carry it around as your persona.
And for those who find themselves with a hat list that is way too long, or let me ask you this, is there such a thing as a hat list that is too long, that is too crowded?
No, actually, the more you get, the more self-aware you become. And what it is that if you can actually go in and deal with them one at a time and make peace with what they are, you'll actually start making them smaller and smaller. So when you get through your hat list, what you're left with is who you truly are.
All right, walk me through that in a little more detail.
All right. I had a client one time who was a single mom. Her problem was she didn't think she was paying enough attention to her little girl. So the first thing I wanted to know is, okay, what are you saying about your life? And what do you tell other people when you're being introduced? And she went through her whole gamut. She said, well, I'm a single mom. I work some extraneous hours. I barely have any time to give to my little girl because I'm just so exhausted when I get home. All of these things were hats that she was wearing. So one by one, as we approached them, I told her to break down first, I'm a single mom. What does that truly mean to you? Do you have to be single? You have to be a mom, absolutely, but do you have to be single? That's just a cry for help. So once she started understanding that was a cry for help, she actually started understanding it a little bit more. All of these things, as we worked them out, she started opening her eyes to new realities. When she got her eyes wide open, she was absolutely rejoiceful. She quit her job. She started doing something she loves to do. And the next thing you know, she doesn't just have time for her little girl. She's got a living that has given them a life that is enviable. Once you start realizing who you are, taking care of those hats, taking care of all of it, new spectrums of reality open up for you.
So this whole concept is truly about going within, it sounds like, to expand.
Not to expand. It's the expansion happens.
Okay.
Okay, that's a natural thing. Going within to take care of the issues that are yours to take care of. Not avoiding them, looking at them and seeing what they're about so that you can take the energy out of them so it doesn't control your life anymore.
So really being curious about you.
Being curious.
About
yourself. If you can live in curiosity, you'll have a much more joyous life, I promise you.
You have another exercise entitled The Last 5 Minutes. What's that about?
All right. Well, when you go to bed, if you take the time to think of loving, joyous thoughts for the last 5 minutes. This could be a prayer, this could be a meditation, this could be anything. What you're doing is you're programming your mind to carry that kind of peace into your dreams. When you're sleeping, and you'll actually sleep more soundly. So the last 5 minutes is actually programming yourself to go to a better place while you're sleeping.
You talk a great deal about shadow play. What is that?
All right, that's my psychological background. Shadow play is, we can go back to hats. If you are angry at somebody, it's really never about what you think you're angry at them for. So if you can place that person inside of your mind, sit them right in front of you, and then ask them the questions that your heart longs to ask them, such as sitting in front of somebody, why are you so arrogant with me? And then wait for the answer. I call it shadow play because an answer will come. It might come in your dreams. It might come immediately. Okay, everybody's different in this. But in doing this, you take the energy out of the situation. And that's what the whole book is about, is taking the energy out of situations that are holding you back.
Sitting, are you saying that you should literally sit with someone, for example, with whom you have challenges, or are you doing that in your mind's eye, or... Help us out with that a little bit more.
Okay. All of this work that I suggest in Joyful Now is internal work. No, the person that you think that you're angry at is not the problem. It's the emotions that are within you. And you need to deal with that one-on-one within you. Shadow work is all internal work. You do not share this with anybody.
I see. It's also very empowering work.
Oh, yes. I mean, hugely empowering.
You also spend a fair amount of time expressing your truly deep concerns about what you describe as sleep debt. Why? What's the big deal about sleep?
All right. When you're in a situation, especially a work situation, and you're in a high-stress situation all the time, if you've got sleep debt, in other words, if you go home and you drink your six-pack of beer and you stay up all night and you go to work completely wasted from the night before, you are experiencing sleep debt. Understand this. If you are behind on sleep by 10 hours, you can actually be arrested, even if you've had no alcohol, for having a high alcohol content. Your mind is of the same state as a high alcohol content. So say you're working overtime a lot. Your sleep is being cut down by 2 hours. Be aware of how much sleep you're losing, and then do something to make it up. Because a lot of stress that we live with that we really don't need to live with is because we're not getting the rest we need to recuperate from the stress we had the day before.
Well, now, there are those who say that once the sleep is lost, the sleep is lost, there's no way to make it up. But you're saying make it
actually,
up.
Actually, psychologically, that is not true. The problem is that you can get into such a state that you can stay in it because you're not self-aware enough to do something about it, absolutely. But if you go home on Friday, end of the day of work, and decide, I'm going to sleep this much extra time, you can actually program yourself before you go to bed to sleep that extra time, to actually make up the deficit. And if you are 12 hours behind on deficit, it only takes an hour or two of extra sleep to actually make up that difference.
So how do you figure that out? For the person who you just described, who perhaps is losing a couple of hours of sleep a night, so at the end of a five-day work week, 10 hours of sleep mm-hmm. is gone. How do they determine how much sleep they need to, quote-unquote, make that up?
Okay, this is a little bit deeper work, okay? First thing is you've got to be very aware that you are in deficit. When you're aware of that, you can actually make a shift on that. It's called the circadian cycle. And what it is you actually, the last 5 minutes of sleep, you tell yourself, I am going to heal the situation. I am going to sleep extra time, whatever is required to make this difference up. And your body will actually respond to that.
It sounds like you're saying your body will also appreciate that.
Oh, God. It'll make the whole world a different place.
So for someone who perhaps says, I'm going to sleep on Saturday until noon, that's a useful thing.
If that's what it takes, absolutely.
Okay.
Because if you can get up from your sleep and be 100% again, won't life be richer?
That's absolutely true. It sounds like you're saying that when you choose to, quote unquote, make up that sleep debt, you need to do it with intention. You need to have a thought about what you're wanting to do with your sleep.
Exactly. The thing is, self-awareness is key in all of this work. Every bit of the work I have is all about self-awareness.
Do you ever work with children?
No, I really don't. I would love to set up an education system to where we teach children how to be more self-aware and, well, that's it, self-awareness.
I would think that if children were more self-aware, we'd have a whole century of children who were less likely to bully and all that goes with bullying.
Absolutely. There's actually schools in this world where that has been proven factually. Yeah, absolutely.
You talk about dreams, and again, they're so powerful, and for so many people, the dreams that they thought they had are lost. They've broken down for some reason. Talk to those persons who are saying right now, you know, I had dreams. and I don't want to have dreams anymore. I don't want to be disappointed anymore.
All right. The thing is first thing is find out what that truly means for you. Self-awareness, again, is at the key of this. If you don't like what you're dreaming, 5 minutes before you go to sleep, you can actually change what you're dreaming just by being peaceful with yourself and peaceful with the world. Personally, I spend the last 5 minutes being thankful for everything I've experienced in that day. And it's powerful. But it's all about being aware of why. If you know the why, you can actually help yourself. You can actually take the why and make it into something of a gift rather than a deficit.
So again, I'm hearing curiosity. I'm hearing looking within. I'm hearing self-care.
Absolutely. It's all about, the thing is everybody has been taught that selfishness is bad. No, the word selfishness, yeah, has a bad connotation. If you're not self-aware, you cannot be good to anybody else. If you hold all these things inside of you, what you're going to do is you're going to strike out at the world as if it's responsible for it. It's not. There's nothing outside of you that makes you feel the way you do. It's all within you. Deal with it.
The concept and the shift of focusing from the world is against me, the world creates these things to me, to this is mine, I have created this, which could be quite disturbing for a lot of people. But the other side of that is, I can do something about this. I can make a difference in my own life. Is also quite empowering, I would suggest.
Yes, it is. In fact, there's nothing in this world that's more empowering. There's really nothing in this world that's more empowering.
You make a comment that it just sort of seemed to jump out at me when you say, and it seems like it's sort of off the path of the book, but perhaps not, when you say, prior to a flight into a new time zone, don't eat for 12 hours.
Okay, that's part of my psychological upbringing. That's what I went to college for, psychology.
Okay.
Okay, what I'm teaching people is have you ever flown across the ocean and had sleep deprivation?
Sure.
Okay, well, if you stop eating 12 hours before your flight, you don't eat on the flight, and then when you land and you get in that place, you eat for the first time, what you're doing is you're readjusting your natural body rhythm so that you can avoid the sleep deprivation, sleep lag. Okay, it really does work. Okay, what it does is the circadian rhythm that's within you can actually be manipulated to bring on another cycle. In other words, one that's normal for the time zone that you're now in.
So again, what I'm hearing is that as individuals, we have an extraordinary amount of power. We have an extraordinary amount of choice within that we can access if we choose, and we need to choose.
Absolutely. The thing is that we underestimate who we are all the time, and it's really, really horrific on the world. If we just become more self-aware, we have full control of everything that goes on in our lives, everything. And I do not mean accepting anything. Everything we have in life, we have full control over.
That's a pretty powerful comment.
Good.
Tim, is there a website then folks can go to get more information about your work and what you're doing?
Sure. JoyfulNowLLC.com. It is a blog site that I put together, and you can actually find my book on there, and you can read more about this information there.
Okay, so that's JoyfulNowLLC.com.
Correct.
All right. That sounds like terrific information. I'm sure that folks will want to follow up with the kind of philosophy that you are espousing and the work that you are doing. Do you have any regrets in your own life?
That I started so late on this work.
Hmm.
I would have lived such more full. I would have been where I'm at 10 years ago rather than today.
So when you have regrets, not necessarily you personally, but just folks in general, when they have regrets, it's in the past, you can't change it. It already happened or didn't happen. What do you do?
First thing is figure out what it truly means for you. You see, everybody who's successful in life does not fear failure They use failure to grow life. If you have regrets, it means that you're ruining something that you did. Instead of doing that, embrace what you did and see what it truly meant. Self-awareness is key.
I get that. All right. T.M. Marshall, author of Joyful Now, Heal Yourself, Heal the World. And the website, Tim, once again?
JoyfulNowLLC.com.
All right. Tim, thank you very much for joining us today on this edition of Mind Talk.
Thank you so much.
And folks, thank you for joining us on this edition of Mind Talk, which is available to you on demand at mindtalk.org. That's MYNDTALK.ORG. Or you can download the Mind Talk app from the iTunes store. Mind Talk is brought to you daily as an educational public service. It is not intended to replace any work that you might choose to do with a licensed medical, mental health, or other professional. Mind Talk is produced by Jim Brown and 26x2 Communications. If you would like to be in touch with me directly, you can send an email to Pamela, P-A-M-E-L-A, at mindtalk.org. That's MYNDTALK.ORG. And folks, remember, if it's unacceptable, then that is exactly what it is. Unacceptable. You take care.